That's Lee Morgan on trumpet, Joe Henderson on tenor sax, Barry Harris on piano, Bob Cranshaw on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums with Lee Morgan's The Sidewinder, the title track of his 1963 album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, with something still stuck in my throat. I just don't get it, but we keep moving. I hope you're well and that the day greets you in fine spirits. Well, I want to talk about something that happened yesterday that got a smattering, but only a smattering, of coverage. Although to my mind, it was a very significant development, a very significant event. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee held a hearing yesterday that, though very understated, was explosive in its import. The hearing's focus, well, it was what measures are in place or need to be in place to check President Donald Trump's sole authority to use nuclear weapons. It certainly was not an accidental hearing, and there's great significance as to why this question is being raised now. But we get a quote from Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, and it was a very interesting clue. Quote, "We are concerned that the President of the United States is so unstable and is so volatile that he might order a nuclear weapon strike that is so wildly out of step with the United States national security interests." This was a quote that I read from an article in Mother Jones written by David Corn, reporting on the hearing and the concerns of several members of the committee. To me, that is an extraordinary thing to say. It's accurate, but it is an extraordinary reason to have a hearing. I understand that there is a lot of politics going on and a lot of politically involved decisions and decision-making, a lot of public posturing to score political points. However, that aside, this seemed to me to be a frightening reason to hold a hearing. I don't know that it has ever been done in U.S. history, that a hearing, at least in the minds of a committee, a hearing is necessary to explore preemptively, if you will, the possibility of an out-of-control president pressing the nuclear button. And while I appreciate that there's a lot of politics involved, the Democrats trying to make points, score points against the Republican administration, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that we have arrived at a point with this president and this administration where people are justifiably concerned that the person in the White House, who is the commander-in-chief, who up until now has been trusted by the leadership, the political leadership, and the military leadership, who has been entrusted with the enormous authority to decide unilaterally when and how to engage in nuclear war, that the time has come, they feel, to revisit this, because it is quite possible that they are operating on very dangerous assumptions. And the number one dangerous assumption is that the person who is commander-in-chief now may not be mentally and psychologically equipped and fit to be entrusted with this awesome responsibility. Wow. So they're having a hearing to figure out what is the fail-safe here. In case the man who is in the White House goes off on a bender and decides one morning or one evening, you know what, I'm fed up of this. I'm going to, as he has already said, he has already intimated that he's predisposed to leveling, obliterating North Korea. And maybe other countries as well. He'll just throw in, you know, throw in to fill out the quota. Maybe he would say, you know what, today we're attacking 5 countries or 10. I'm commander-in-chief, and look, there are buttons. I got buttons. Let me press the red one and see what happens. I was appalled that this did not get wide coverage. Because, as you know, I said from the very beginning, there's something wrong with this man. You may recall that. That was my main concern about the election of Donald Trump. That in all these categories, including and especially the capacity unilaterally to engage in nuclear warfare, just across the board, how fit is this president for the job? He shows every symptom. He sends every signal that he is not a well-settled individual, psychologically speaking. People have talked about it and so forth. You know, they shush behind the curtains and in little corners because they don't want to embarrass the country before the world. The world knows he's not operating with all gears. But you have a hearing of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which takes charge of all of these questions, matters of foreign policy, yes, but matters also of how the United States either guards its foreign policy or implements its foreign policy insofar as these things may require military action of one sort or another. But it was very, very jarring that we had a committee. This is no, you know, little incidental committee. This was a very important committee. And they are asking the question now of experts, military experts, defense experts, foreign policy experts, diplomatic experts. How do we, what do we do to assure ourselves that there is something in place, some procedure, some mechanism in place to curtail the very clear possibility that this president is so out of control he can literally launch us into World War III? That's what they're saying. And the reason this was so newsworthy, despite the fact that it got very little coverage, was that the implication of the hearing itself is frightening. It means that somebody or several people who are in a position to evaluate the situation we're in are really, really concerned with this matter of an out-of-control president with the power to launch nuclear warfare is a real possibility. It's not a joke. This is a real possibility, they're saying. And the procedures that held up heretofore in previous administrations sufficed. They were okay. Because we didn't have a president. This is the implication of what they say. We did not have a president who behaved so erratically, who was so volatile, who was so unstable, that the procedures that we had heretofore were adequate to give us enough leverage to contain any possibility that they could foresee that someone else or something else might have had to kick in if the United States had come to the point of nuclear war or considering nuclear war or considering battling nuclear war. There were procedures in place that at least assured that this was not going to be a unilateral decision. There were safeguards. Because in the end, as commander-in-chief, the president or the presidency has been given extraordinary power to exercise unilateral decisions in matters of nuclear war. Now, there are all kinds of checks and balances on the inside that normally would kick in. They're saying, this is the implication of the hearing itself, they're saying, we're not so sure with this president. He is off center. There's something wrong with this guy. And we cannot just sit by and not refute or not be concerned about the fact that as commander-in-chief, by law, he has certain rights and privileges to act unilaterally regarding decisions of nuclear, use of nuclear weapons. Trump, of course, relishes the idea. That's one of the prizes that he won, being elected president, to have this kind of absolute power. So he has it. Yesterday's hearing says there are considerable groups of people, and these are not people given to being alarmists. These are not the kind of people who typically will run out in the street screaming that the sky is falling. These are not people who easily become excited. But they are. They are. Here's what was even more telling. This hearing pretty much confirmed there was no major resolution except that they could not agree that there was anything much beyond a certain point that they can do to contain the possibility of an out-of-control president, Donald Trump, exercising his unilateral power to engage in some form or any form of nuclear warfare, that there is a point beyond which they can't do anything. Not the generals, not the people who are involved in making these high cost decisions. So that what they said in this hearing, I mean, they didn't spell it out A, B, C, D, E, but one can surmise very easily that they're saying that in fact and in theory, the president still can exercise unilateral power to engage in nuclear warfare. To my mind, this was a major, major news story. Because A, it tells us that the very reason, the very purpose of this hearing confirms that there are enough people operating in high places who believe that Donald Trump can't be trusted with this responsibility. He's not fit. I mean, they didn't say it in those words. But that clearly was a conclusion, and that clearly was the driving force behind having this hearing at all. That this particular power, normally arrogated to a president as commander-in-chief, they're warning us that we have to make an exception here in the case of Donald Trump. Something has to be put in place, something extra has to be put in place to safeguard the country from a very irrational commander-in-chief, whose volatility, this is their words, he's a volatile man, unstable man, should not have this power. So in a way, you have to interpret the hearing as a warning. And these are not run-of-the-mill regular people. These are people seasoned in matters of warfare and diplomacy and so forth. They're saying, we're kind of out of options here. Because constitutionally, he's supposed to have these powers. And up until now, in the history of arrogating these powers to various presidents, Democrat, Republican, but they were sane, they're saying. This president, we have some very deep concerns about him having the capacity to, without warning, just press a button. And we can't have that. That's what they're saying. That's what the hearing is saying. They're saying that we have to come up with something. When I say we, I mean the war-making establishment will have to come up with something and fast. There has to be some internal mechanism that will kick in automatically when we see him going overboard and he's there. We have to have something to kick in that would override what is considered to be automatic and unilateral power by the president. How about that? This is frightening. And it's out in the open. They're not shushing anymore. They're saying to the nation, we are having a problem here. And we are warning the country that this is a problem that we all should be concerned about. And it goes beyond whether you're Democrat or Republican or conservative. It is something that people have been reluctant to admit, avoiding the subject, denying that it even exists. But the fact that a whole bunch of people gathered in the nation's capital yesterday to discuss this matter and to discuss the ramifications of this matter, and to discuss the nearness of a fatal decision means that we have now to come to terms with the question of mental fitness on the part of Donald Trump for this job. Not because people have something against him, or this is a good way to embarrass him. They're saying the nation needs to have some way to put him in check because of a very real possibility of a knee-jerk decision being made in the middle of a volatile or unstable moment. It's real. This is not me and you talking. This is not the view of the regular folk. These are the inside people. And they're nervous as hell. So what do we do? I don't know. I have no idea. The nation surely hasn't been openly faced with a task like this. The legislators have not been faced with a task like this in U.S. history. Because essentially it involves overriding methods and protocols that have been in place for decades. How do you do that? When it predictably will be compounded by this pull and tug between Republicans and Democrats, largely, when the matter is much bigger than party. Now you're talking about the safety of the nation and of other nations. That's a question. How does the country deal with this? When legislators and the bureaucracy, the military bureaucracy itself, is clearly grappling with this issue from a whole other level, where they eventually said yesterday, in so many words, we have no answers right now on how we cope with the situation. So I'm asking you for some ideas. What do you think about the situation based on yesterday's hearing that we might be in? And what might be some ways in which this question, this matter, can be resolved? 888-874-4888. We'll take your thoughts, your comments, right after the short break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're taking your comments and your reactions to what I'm reporting on. And actually, this also comes from an article in Mother Jones, the magazine, the online magazine, an article written by David Korn. And he reports, because he covered this yesterday, but it triggered in me an idea of going a little further with it to find out what our thoughts are about this situation. 888-874-4888. It is vital. You know, so much is going on. I can't say that anybody is to blame for, you know, whether we know one thing or we know something else. There's so much that is going on that people literally have to pick and choose. But the issue I want to raise here is something that we've talked about, but tangentially, We've talked about and raised questions about Donald Trump's mental fitness. And other people have raised it as well. Well, here, it kind of came to a head yesterday. Gene from Maryland, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Is it Gene or Jean?
No, it is Gene.
Okay, thank you.
So, Utrice, clearly you have opened up a severe can of worms this afternoon.
A severe can.
And the reason I say that is I would suggest that what you are describing is actually worse than what you were describing. And I say that because having reviewed the hearing yesterday, it sounds more to me like the Senate is not just questioning Donald Trump and his fitness, but the process by which we select a president. And I would back that up and suggest that the last three presidents that have held the office, there have been questions about their fitness, their mental fitness. We started off with George W. Bush. And he was the one where people would refer to him as the village idiot. We had Barack Obama, who, of course, was black and was not fit because he was black. And now we have President Trump, who is doing things which pale in the face of reasonable explanation. And so the Senate, being the body that deliberates on process, that hearing says to me that they are seriously considering changing the method that is used to vet and determine who is fit to be president.
Okay, so with this in mind, what, in your view, right now, do you think the process might look like or might involve?
Well, I think we have some examples that we can look at. If we take a look at how Supreme Court justices are selected, and if I'm correct, and I might be wrong on this, but we have not seen a nominated individual to have a hearing for Supreme Court justice who has not graduated from Harvard or Yale since we saw Thurgood Marshall. And there will be a range of predetermined qualifiers in which a person who is selected by a party to be their presidential nominee, they'll have to hop through these hoops. And should you not meet these requirements in the designated fashion, I don't believe the party will select one of these people. And the party and the actions of the party are not necessarily a democratic process. And so given that, it becomes easy to control by the party bosses. And so I really do believe we're going to see these qualifiers, such as your education, your family background, your work history. These are going to be the sort of things that we are going to see. And so by extension, you will never see anyone who has a background where they are not a wealthy individual, who didn't go to the right schools or belong to the right clubs, who was poor. God help us if we ever had a president who had a background of being poor, you know, Bill Clinton being the exception. But I think that this is a terribly slippery slope that Donald Trump is being used as an excuse to take us down in order to change the process. Because by hook or by crook, Donald Trump would be gone in a maximum of 7 more years. However, the presidency endures.
Well, let me ask you this. How does what you are advancing here or explaining here, how does that square with the basic premise on which people could run for president? You know, you have to be a citizen of the United States. There, you know, you have to be such and such an age, and you're okay to run for president. These things have been outlined as qualifications a long time ago. Now we're getting into if you talk about a slippery slope, now we are considering things like, what is your, you know, mental health like? Are you a rational person? These other kinds of qualifiers, as you call them, have nothing to do with the basic rules or the laws governing who is eligible to run for president. So if a person eligible to run for president ostensibly meets the criteria, now how would you impose new criteria given the fact that we've just discovered that the role of commander-in-chief, which a president will be if elected, requires more than just the basics?
Well, I would suggest to you that these discussions have already happened. Now, were they trial balloons or someone's foolish notion? I'm not sure. But you'll probably recall that it was then-Senator Jeff Sessions who suggested amending the Constitution to allow Arnold Schwarzenegger to run for president. And so if the Senate, as the body who carries such deliberations with respect to amendments to the Constitution and changes to the process, it starts there. And we're seeing with Judge Moore down in Alabama, for example, which you've been discussing for the last day or so, where such basics as due process are simply thrown out the window in an effort to get some political choice made. I don't think it's too much of a stretch to talk about the kinds of changes to change that process by which the president is selected. And all of the chess pieces in the Senate are already lined up to do it.
In the meantime, what do you suggest as some measure that can address the concerns, the legitimate concerns of members of Congress about the president's mental fitness and the clear and present danger of not having an adequate system of checks and balances with regard to unilateral decisions that he actually does have the power to make?
Well, you know about making your bed and laying down, so that's the bed that America has made, and that's where we all lay down in the evenings. The bigger challenge there is that the Senate has, as well as the Supreme Court, has an array of checks and balances which are adequate to the task. The question is, do you have the guts to use them? The 25th Amendment is there. And I suppose there is some question about under what circumstances could the 25th Amendment be used. But should the president need to be removed from office for some reason, it is there. Secondly, one of the retired generals, Air Force general, was testifying to the committee, and he was talking about the choice that soldiers may have to make as to whether or not to follow what is deemed an illegal order. Now, that gets kind of sticky because, you know, usually there are people that are manning missile silos and flying the airplanes that are of a rank of major and below. So the question of getting them to put their necks on the line and disregard such an order, that could be a challenge.
Well, that's not just disregarding an order. That's called insurrection. When
or
you have
insubordination.
Soldiers deciding to defy their superiors or the orders given. That's their job to execute orders given. And if one of the methods that the general was citing was the possibility of having widespread rebellion within the ranks, well, that's not a solution, is it? The question still stands, but you've given us some very thoughtful insights today, and I thank you for raising them, because that just automatically kicks in the need for a follow-up discussion from today. Thank you so much, Gene, for calling in. Lincoln from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hi, good day. How are you, Eugene?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Lincoln?
I'm okay. I don't see like it's as clear-cut as it sounds. And I think we're in a state of a lot of confusion, internal confusion, a lot of subterfuge. And I think that meeting yesterday is a continuation of the meeting, the attempt and the desire to create a coup and to end Trump. And I'm not saying this in defense of Trump, because, yes, he has displayed some irrational behavior. George Bush acted unilaterally when he invaded Iraq. Obama acted unilaterally when he invaded Libya. Neither of these two had the approval of Congress. And when George Bush invaded Iraq, he brought about, a horrible thing. Over 100,000 people died. You know, we're not talking about 100 flies, 100,000 people. Yes, it did not threaten the lives of Americans. So we are not shaking on our boots, right? And we weren't shaking on our boots, which shows how disingenuous we are, even on this conversation, even with these people yesterday, because they didn't have an emergency meeting because American lives were not threatened. But if a World War III should ensue, then everybody's here life would be threatened, which means that they're saying, not just they, we too are saying that, you know, if 100,000 people die or 2 million people die elsewhere at a unilateral action of a president, it's okay. We can live with that, you know. And that's one of the reasons why I myself am not shaking in my boots, because I am witnessing is America embroiled in something that she has been creating throughout the world, internal conflict. I mean, and I'm not straying from the point. Look at what just happened with Mugabe.
You know, you sensed me, and you headed me off at the gap here. But that is, in fact, what I was going to say. You're kind of straying. I want to bring you back, Lincoln, to the question at hand. All the things that you've said, notwithstanding, and they're relevant, but I want to get to the heart of what yesterday stood for, in the sense that we had people who are in a position to come to all kinds of conclusions about things, who have the position to turn the discussion to somewhere else other than where they went. And where they went was that there is great concern about the question of putting nuclear warfare strictly in the hands of a president whose mental fitness they believe is not certain. So in this scenario, what do you think is really a possible way to approach the question and to come up with some kind of solution? Because, I mean, this is the reality that we have.
Well, there could be something similar like what I think Israel even though I don't approve of them, I think they have a thing where if soldiers do not agree with their orders, they can actually defy it. I think so. And that, you know, like they don't have to, if ordered to kill someone, they don't have to do it and they wouldn't be brought upon charges. We could do that, you know. But I still say that. I don't think that that is what it's really all about. I still do believe that this is another extension of the coup they are plotting. And I think it is, they're approaching it from many angles. And the same
I think you're absolutely correct. You are absolutely correct on that point. There has been, even before Trump took office, we've discussed it on the program, that the intention was to take him down. Still is the intention to take him down by every possible means necessary. Even so, this is going to be a question that has to be answered by any person who is at the helm, any person who is commander-in-chief. This is a question.
If it's going to be something that's going to be applicable to all succeeding presidents, then I say they should come together and vote and say, okay, let's find a way to means of checks and balances, and make it be compulsory that, you know, Congress have to vote on whether or not nuclear war, you know, can be ordered.
But Congress has the power right now. Congress has the power right now to have a say in the engagement in war of any type.
Mm-hmm. So well, just make it be that war cannot be declared unilaterally by any president, period.
They have that now. But we know, for example, the United States is involved in so many different arenas of war without permission from Congress, without knowledge and consent of Congress. We just saw it in October in Niger. Many people in Congress, including those on the Armed Services Committee, had no idea of the scope of U.S. involvement in warfare in other countries.
Which goes to show that they don't really abide by their own laws. Because George Bush, when he went into Iraq, he just did what he felt like doing. And no one said that he wasn't held accountable. You know, Obama destroyed Libya. He wasn't held accountable. So what we are actually saying is that there is no way out.
Is that something that you think we should live with, that there's no way out?
Yeah, meaning that, I mean, like, laws did not restrict George Bush from invading Iraq. So even if we change the law, how is it going to restrict Trump or anyone else if George Bush or whoever did what they did? The same thing, you know, applies to all the others.
Well, for one thing, we could argue that the severity of the consequences of having unilateral action by the president, any president, could produce almost global a global fallout. And because of that, all the more reason to engage in a discussion about what procedures kick in, what kinds of controls are there for this president, and to satisfy the people who are in this arena, that even though things may look daunting, we are okay in the sense that we have some fail safes that we can and kick in so that we do not have unilateral action by a president, and more so by a president who we believe to be unstable and volatile.
But I think that this should not only apply when it's involving possible global annihilation. It should be also applicable when it involves killing 100,000 people in Iraq or elsewhere. And I see, and I think, and I love you dearly, and I respect you greatly. But
you know, when you start buffering like this, I know you're going to slam me. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to be gentle, but I think you've been unfair and disingenuous to say, you know, okay, we slide over 100,000 in Iraq, but now
nobody would say that. And seriously, I would never ever hold to that point of view. That is not going to be my point of view ever.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a specific development. This happened yesterday. These were the questions raised yesterday. And the concern, as I said in the preamble to our discussion today, was that we had confirmation that the matters that were discussed about Trump outside of these military circles and congressional circles and so forth, actually were articulated specifically yesterday. And therefore, it raised the level of discussion instantly about a matter that has great significance for the here and now, not for the past. And certainly we have to look at the situation of how they're trying to come to terms with this question, because it would have immediate and future implications. We can't change the past of the gruesomeness of war. I mean, we had Madeleine Albright saying that it was justified to kill 500,000 children. How could anybody even internalize that kind of thinking? But this is the situation, and I'm trying to be in the moment because it was raised just yesterday and confirming many, many thoughts. But now where do we go from here is what I'm asking.
If we will honor... I think, you know, let's understand. I will call back Friday because this one requires a little bit when we can speak, introduce whatever you want to introduce. But I will leave off by saying, splice what I have said so far with what the previous caller said, because I embrace some of what the previous caller said.
All right. Well, we'll hear from you on Friday. And thank you so much. You raised very good points today. I thank you. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air. And not too much time, I'm afraid,
because we're getting
to the end of the program.
Hotep, beloved family, it was an excellent question. And MSNBC and CNN did give some coverage. But one interesting aspect is that a recent survey showed that 75% of the American people, and I guess a lot of those Trump voters, had no idea that the so-called commander-in-chief was the one on the solely on the nuclear button. But I think that first of all, if you bring these people into office through they're raising for the president billion-plus dollars, it's a problem. So all of that has to change in terms of the finance laws. The 25th Amendment is no answer because the people like the vice president has to sign on and the cabinet members, even though Tillerson called Trump a bleeping moron, which seems to be pretty accurate, it's not a way to go. So the whole structure needs to be, in many ways, turned upside down.
Do you think now that anything could be done now?
Well, we need to have the discussion as to how these dynasties, whether it's the Clinton dynasty or the Bush dynasty, how they operate and get in place. Because, again, the Mercers who financed Breitbart and Trump, they have an agenda that I think the author of Democracy and Change, she really nails down into how we're going into the sewer, and even too many parallels to the 1930s in Germany.
Yes, but for now, considering that we are in the heat of the moment with the, you know, the tit for tat between Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea, we are seeing the rhetoric rising, and with the rhetoric rising, the very clear possibility, it is a possibility, that things could go so off the map before we know it. If
these people
are saying yesterday that they're not sure that there is anything that reasonably could be done in terms of setting a protocol for how to contain a possibly out-of-control president, they're drawing attention to it now. What thoughts do you have about what could be done now?
Well, they need to continue along those lines, and they need, if they're having hearings about it, they need to come up with, nothing is impossible, they need to come up with a protocol that takes any one person's hand, especially somebody as idiotic and volatile and unstable as Trump. But for the future, they need to come up with a protocol. To me, it's a piece of cake. And, of course, until they change the financing of all these so-called elections, we'll still be in the same pickle. Thank you.
All right. Well, we have to leave it there. Thank you for calling. I'm getting a hint that our time is up. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Ring of Fire Radio. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. We'll leave it right here for today. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.